Thank you. My name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Phil and Dino, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Natalie will read the preamble.
Hi, my name is Natalie. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, Craig will read the steps.
Hi, my name's Craig. I'm an alcoholic. We admit we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Come to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Admitted to God, to others, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Made a list of all people we have harmed and become willing to make amends to all of them. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. Having a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Heather will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Heather. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Stephen.
Hi, my name is Stephen. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 12, 2008. My sponsor is Adam B. I'm proud to call Atlanta Group my AA home group, and I'm currently working Step 9 and living in 10, 11, and 12. Wow. I'm so grateful to be here and to be sober today. My life is so different than it was a year ago that it's hard to even think about it without, I just want to cry. I love AA, and I'm so grateful for the program as is outlined in the big book, because it gives me clear direction. And I'm so grateful and relieved to know what's wrong with me. And that I have a solution. Because something's been wrong with me my entire life. I grew up with alcoholism. I was an alcoholic child. I did not like myself. I always felt different. I had 5 sisters and no brothers. So I thought that was the problem. I grew up on a Christmas tree farm in a rural area of Southern California. And I was gay. And I didn't even know what that was. I just knew I was different. And I hated myself. And I wanted to be somebody else. My entire life, I wanted to be somebody else. I remember begging my parents to send me to military boarding school instead of to the public high school, because I just was so afraid, and I just thought I didn't have the tools. I didn't know what normal boys felt like or thought, and I didn't think I'd make it. And they didn't send me, but about that time in 8th grade is when I found alcohol. And it became my solution. You know, the big book talks about our problem was a lack of power. And I never felt like I had any power or I fit in. And alcohol made everything better. I felt powerful. I felt like I fit in. I was funny. I all of a sudden had something in common with all of these people. And I was a really good drinker, you know, and it progressed. I drank like crazy throughout high school. I went away to college, which was the scariest thing ever, to leave my parents' house. And the first thing I did was I had all these sweet mates at school, and I was afraid to speak to them. I was so afraid to interact with them, so I piled them all into my car and took them to Tijuana and got everybody drunk. That was my solution, and it worked. I actually knew tons of people in Tijuana because that's where we used to party in high school, so they thought I was really cool, and I was just, you know, I just knew how to drink. And it worked for me for a long time, but it's a progressive disease, and it continued to progress, and life became harder and more unmanageable, and I was able to get through college, and I got teaching credentials, and I went to grad school, and I actually, you know, had jobs, but it just kept getting harder and harder and harder to hold it together and try to look like a normal person. And drugs are a big part of my story. I'm not going to focus on that. But my disease progressed in that way. And that's how I hit my bottom, which is the only reason I mention it. And I found another fellowship. And it saved my life. Because I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I thought I had a very specific problem. And it wasn't alcohol. And but by being able to go to another fellowship, I was able to meet a sponsor who brought me to the Atlantic Group and to work the steps out of the Big Book. And today I say I'm an alcoholic proudly because I just, like I said, I know what's wrong with me, and this program gives me a solution, and it's given me just a completely different outlook on life. You know, I had to change. I didn't want to change. I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. I thought the problem was with everybody else, and I quit jobs. I broke up with boyfriends. I moved cities, and things just kept getting worse. And I finally got here, and I had a sponsor in the other fellowship before I found Adam. And when I would complain to him, he would start to point out my part, and I was like, "You're not listening to me. This has nothing to do with me." And I wasn't willing to hear it, and I relapsed. I relapsed 4 times in 6 months. And it was awful to not be able to stop and to want to stop and to not be able to and to have to come back and not be able to look people in the eye and to look at the floor. You know, the Big Book calls it incomprehensible demoralization, and I was living it for 9 months of counting days. I counted days for 9 months. So if you're new, or if you're coming back from a slip especially and you think this program won't work for you, keep coming back and try. That's all you have to do, because I didn't think it would work for me. And it did. And if it will work for me, it will work for anybody. I really believe that. It will work for anybody if you try. So I counted days in this room. This room is very special to me. It's really strange to see it from up here. And last year, about this time, I went on a trip to Pockets of Enthusiasm with my sponsor and my grand sponsor and some friends, Kristen and Kareth, that weren't my friends at the time. I didn't know them yet. And I was afraid to go. I was afraid to get in the car. And my grand sponsor just said, "Get in the car." And something happened on that trip. I just, something changed, something shifted. And I did my third step on the beach when I was up there. The last day, we stayed up late both nights getting as much work done as we could so that we'd be ready for me to take my third step out on the beach before we left. And I had a beautiful walk on the beach with my grand sponsor. And I got to go out on the beach with my sponsor and kneel down and look out at the ocean and say the third step prayer for the first time, and something shifted, and It was the line about take away my problems that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. And something, that's when it stopped becoming about, it wasn't about me anymore. It was about helping somebody else. I actually started to think that if I can do this, then I'll be able to help somebody else. And that is what got me through a really rough year. Taking inventory and sharing that with my sponsor was not fun. I was miserable. But I have to say, I really started to see the beauty of this program when I got to the eighth and ninth step, especially. And I got to make amends to my mom. You know, one of my relapses was last Christmas. And I disappeared for 3 days and she thought I was dead. And I was blaming her. And I got to, and several years before that, I had actually made a promise to her that I would get sober and I didn't keep it. And I got to make amends to her and tell her that I'm finally keeping the promise that I made. And I made amends to other sisters. I'm making a lot of financial amends that are really scary right now because my job's temporary. But I'm not running from those problems anymore. And it's amazing to call, you know, I had to call a creditor today and set up a payment that I don't know if I'm going to have a job in 2 months, but I still set it up. And it was just not having to have that fear. And then now that I'm in 10, 11, and 12, it's just amazing. It's given me, continuing to take my inventory and to pray and meditate has given me a foundation that, to live by, and I know I'm just at the beginning of this journey, and I'm so grateful for my sobriety. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Anne.
Hi, my name is Anne H., and I'm an alcoholic. My sponsor is Sherry W., and my sobriety date is March 17th, 2005. This makes me emotional, too. I'm so grateful to be here today. I can't tell you how many times I was in my bed just wondering what it would be like to be sober for like a couple of weeks and what my life would look like. And it looks so much better than I ever imagined. I came from a family that was pretty dysfunctional. There was some abuse, and I have to say that none of that caused me to be here. And that's such a relief because you can't change what happened to you, but you can change when you come in here. And that's what I've been able to do. I started drinking. My first drink was with a family member at like 10 years old. And I drank up till I was 26. I went into a meeting for the first time after I had lost a numerous amount of friends and no one would speak to me in college. And I didn't get it the first time. And I ended up drinking and using other substances for 9.5 years more. That took me to sleeping in Central Park in cocktail dresses, hanging out with homeless people who were actually kind enough to, like, let me use their blankets when I would just stumble on them drunk and have nowhere else to go. Because at that point, I was such a traveling drunk. I mean, every borough, anybody, I was always unhappy with any situation I was in, even when I was drinking. So when people talk about the relief of the first drink, actually, when I took the first drink, there was no real relief until I blacked out. And at the end, in the last years, that was the part that I would really look for, was the adventure. I was like, okay, now I'm going to black out. Now I won't have to feel bad or hate myself. Because from a very young age, and, of course, compounded with the things that I had done to myself and to others, I really hated myself. waking up was just pretty much a nightmare, whether I was hungover or not. And thank God, knowing when you come in here that it's not just a drinking thing. Because if you come in here and you're like, well, I put down the drink and my life still sucks. Well, why is that? So it's not just the drinking, and thank God I found that out. I was in here for 2 years, about 2 years ago, and I was ready to kill myself. And I'm thinking, how do I want to kill myself if I haven't drank in 2 years? I'm doing everything they say, which meant, everything they said meant, I'm hanging out with people after a meeting, going for coffee, and I'm talking to a lot of people on the phone and complaining. So now I'm opening up, and I'm like, well, now I'm sharing some of my secrets. So why is everything still so horrendous? I was literally a shivering wreck on the floor, and I thought, I just want to die. I didn't think that I could trust someone enough to tell them things that I had done. But here, you meet people that are just like you and that won't judge you. And I'm telling you, I was going to kill myself. I thought, I'm going to die with these secrets. I didn't know what to do. So I met a woman, and of course, I was praying to God. I said, please put someone in my life in the next week or I'm just going. She put somebody in my life. God put someone in my life. It's a little Freudian slip is showing. But God put someone in my life that I met her as under the guise of a friendship. Like, oh, we're going to start fellowshipping. She never really hangs out with anybody. And she said to me after 10 minutes of talking to me, she said, you know what? I can take you through the steps. And I knew. And I think, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but the grace period where you know it's like, if I don't start doing this suggestion that I didn't have to do 2 months ago, my grace period is up. Like, I knew when I came into the rooms this time that my grace period was over. I wouldn't have any more luck. I wouldn't be able to have cops take me home, invite them in, and them not come in. I wouldn't be able to end up in Central Park and not be killed. I wouldn't be able to have a fist fight with a guy in the middle of the street and not get arrested. I knew that that was going to end. And I knew in my gut that day, I said, I better take her up on this offer. And it's a leap of faith when you come in here. But you know, if you hear one thing today, just one thing that resonates, if it doesn't make sense, grab someone and ask them. Don't walk out of here thinking that you don't have a choice. Because I'll tell you, 9.5 years of complete misery and relationships that I've been lucky to repair some of them. But you know, things don't always become perfect when you come in here. The stuff that I did before just doesn't go away. You can do your best to clean it up, though. And I can walk today with a feeling that I'm okay. And, you know, I have sponsees now, and I have to say, it's the most meaningful relationships. It's such an equal partnership working with a sponsee. So anybody who's new and who is afraid to call somebody because you're bothering them, let me tell you, people who called me and other people I know, you saved their butts so many times. You saved their butts just because you needed help. So my sponsee said to me, she said, you know what? She goes, Anne, it's like you have two lives. The people who end up dying, she said, they're on their deathbed and they have all these regrets. And she said, we get to walk off that deathbed and make all those regrets go away. And it's what Bill W. said. And I think it was even before she read it, she said that. And it was amazing. And it's true. We shall not regret their past or wish to shut the door on it. And before I came here, I was just reading a little bit of the big book. And it said, the stuff that I've done, the stuff that we've done here, collectively, is going to help somebody else. And that is my purpose here. To give away what was so freely given to me, a solution to my problem that goes beyond alcohol. And I am really grateful. And is it okay if I'm kind of done? Okay. Thank you.
And our main speaker tonight is Doug.
nice job. My name is Doug Pekinek, and I am an alcoholic. Because of the grace of God, the actions I've learned to take in Alcoholics Anonymous strong sponsorship, I have not had a drink since November 3rd of 1979, and that, for that I'm very, very grateful. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor a number of guys myself, which I have found to be the probably one of the most important things that I do in Alcoholics Anonymous besides attend meetings. It's good to see some of my good friends here, Ava, Peggy, and a number of others. Heidi. I got Heidi's message yesterday, and she told me what the attire was to be and that I couldn't curse and that I had to talk about alcoholism, and I loved it because my home group is a Working With Others group in Neckong, New Jersey, and that's what we do. We've found that we like to dress up for Alcoholics Anonymous because Alcoholics Anonymous has saved our lives. And as I listened to these two here, my sponsor tells me this. He said, you know, big book studies are nice, and 12-step study meetings are nice, and discussion meetings are so-so. And he said, if you want to hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, go to a speaker's meeting. And I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to tell you any more than what these two folks have already told you tonight. What Stephen started with, you know, just it touched my heart because I came here just like him. I didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. And in a short period of time, you taught me. And I began to understand what my condition was. And I can say this, I never did sleep in a park in a cocktail dress, though. Levity at your expense. I'm sorry. But alcohol, I took my first drink when I was 13 years old, and I had two bottles of beer on a Sunday afternoon, early summer of 1969. And if I could have had three, I would have. But there was only two available. And what I discovered is that the next time that alcohol was available to me, and I grew up in an environment where alcohol was readily available, and I found that once I started to drink, something happened to me that as years went by, I realized that it didn't happen to other people the way that it happened to me. I would take a drink, and then I'd want another, and I'd want another, and another. And I didn't understand why. I'd go out with my buddies and drink in my teens, and they'd go home and sober up and go to school and get good grades, and I'd go home and drink some more. And I just didn't understand why I was so much different, it seemed to me, than they seemed to be able to conduct themselves. And so I began to, you know, explore, you know, things similar to what Stephen kind of had mentioned, that, you know, what were the conditions of my life that created this situation? You know, I was raised Catholic, you know, and I figured that had something to do with it. And I had three brothers and three sisters, and I was raised on a farm out in the middle of Kansas. And I just thought, you know, if I would have been from Kansas City, maybe I would have had a chance in life. And all these things went through my head. And then I would take another drink, and I would dream another dream, and it seemed like it was okay until I sobered up again. And then, as Ann had mentioned, is that when I would stop drinking, I'd get this feeling of being so uncomfortable in my own skin. And I didn't understand that, you know. I thought I needed a psychiatrist, you know. Some other people thought I needed a psychiatrist, you know, because I had a tendency to act out once I drank, you know. And the way I acted out was usually in an automobile. I used to drink and drive a lot. I used to drink and drive fast. One of my fun occupations was outrunning the local sheriff, and I grew up in a very small community, and what I discovered, you know, he never caught me that night, but what happened is I began to look over my shoulder, and day in and day out, I was wondering when he was going to come and arrest me for what I had done, which was I'd outrun his deputy sheriff, and he never came, but I always wondered, when was he going to come? Because I knew that I deserved to be arrested for what I had done that night. But he didn't come. And so the fear began to grow, you know. And I found what would take care of that fear was another drink. And so I would take another drink and the fear would go away, and then I could make the whole thing happen again. And then wake up hungover and wonder, how did I get into this? I was perplexed. I found that I didn't do too well with academics. I didn't do too well with athletics. I did fairly well to being the class clown and the class drunk. And I tried to capitalize on that as much as I possibly could, because despite what alcohol, the problems that it created, I love the effect. And I, even when I would be hungover, I would say, you know, that remorsefully say, I'll never do that again. You know, and as soon as the body would start to feel a little bit better, you know, that craving for alcohol would return, and I would find myself drunk one more time. My story gets kind of from my perspective, I think kind of ugly, because somebody ended up dying as a result of my drinking and driving. And I was 18 years old, and I was doing what I typically do. I was racing with another set of guys, and we were going 100, 110 miles an hour, and I lost control of the car. And the gentleman that was riding with me, the car flipped, and he was thrown out of the car, and the car rolled over top of him and killed him. And I couldn't believe that I was alive after I saw, you know, what the car looked like, and the fact that my friend was dead. And I thought, you know, why is it that I lived, you know? And I had a tremendous amount of guilt and remorse because of that. And, you know, being Catholic, you learn about the Ten Commandments. And the thought that went through my head is, you know, I broken one of these commandments that had been laid out in front of me that I had somewhat aspired to live by. And it always seemed like I fell short of that idea that those proposals had presented. I didn't like, you know, the thou shalt not and thou shalt honor and all the rest. I didn't like that it sounded very authoritarian. I really liked Alcoholics Anonymous when I got here, and the way that they had written the steps, that they were very appealing to me, because they didn't ask me to do anything really that I couldn't swallow a little bit at a time. As my sponsor has told me, he said that, you know, what's happened to me is that I've had an incremental spiritual experience because of Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, I had a tremendous amount of guilt in my life by the time I was 18 years old. And for the next 5 years, I spent a lot of time trying to drink and escape. You know, I took geographical cures. I tried to go to college. You know, the laws in 1975 were such that, you know, if that accident would have happened today, I'd be sitting in prison. And that didn't happen to me. But God, I wanted it to happen to me. I felt so bad about what had occurred that I wanted to sit behind bars to take my punishment so I could go on with my life. And what I realized after being an Alcoholics Anonymous for a number of years is that, you know what? You don't need a physical place to be in prison. I was in prison for years and years and years, even after I had sobered up, because of the ideas that I had ingested into my head and that I had carried with me on a day-to-day basis. I went on these geographical cures and I took this job, and I ended up sleeping with a woman that was married, and I'm going, oh my God, now I got all 10 of them, you know, these commandments broken. And I tried to go back to school. I flunked out, you know, twice. The second time I'd started to see a psychiatrist, and I'm very fortunate. This psychiatrist got me into a mental hospital. At the age of 23, I checked into a mental hospital, and the fortunate part for me about being in a mental hospital is that I ended up in a hospital where they told me that what I needed to do was to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have a guy that I sponsor today. He's a couple years older than me, and he was an inpatient in a mental hospital like I had been. And he always ribs me a little bit because it took him a while to get sober. And he says, because when he went to the mental hospital, they said, here, take these pills. Maybe you'll get better. And he always felt like I got a better deal because they told me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous and they told him to take pills. And I believe that's very telling about when someone identifies what our problem is. Because I didn't know that I was an alcoholic when I was in that hospital. What I knew is that I didn't want to go back there. That's all I knew. They indicated to me that because that's the only question I asked, is what do I have to do to not come back to this place? Will you please tell me? And they said, you need to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You need to get a sponsor. And you need to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in your life. And if you'll do those three things, we would hope that you would only come back as a visitor. And I want you to know that what those men and women told me was the absolute truth. And I believe the reason it was the absolute truth for me is because that I'm an alcoholic of the type that needed to have a message that had depth and weight. And that's the direction they pointed me in. Because the people that were working in that place were recovered alcoholics, and they could see one coming from a mile away, and they knew that they needed to point me in that direction. And I feel like that I've been very fortunate because of that direction that was given, that I've been given a very good life as a result of that. Now, I hope I've told you enough so that you would believe that I'm an alcoholic. You know, our book talks about, in a general way, we tell what we were like, what happened, and what we are like now. And I think I've taken care of those two things, the first two parts of that. And I kind of like to tell you about, you know, what has happened and what I'm like today as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got out of that hospital in January of 1980, and I got this sponsor that was sober about 11 months, and his name was Gary. And Gary, just talked to him a couple weeks ago. He was a good man. He spent a lot of time with me. I was 23 years old, and I was probably had the maturity level of a 13-year-old. And what him and his wife did is they took me into their home on a real regular basis, and I view it as they parented me, you know, because we really didn't do a lot of step work, that first sponsor and I. We had a lot of talks, and he's the one that convinced me that I was an alcoholic. Because I came to AA, and keep in mind, the reason I came to Alcoholics Anonymous is because I wanted to stay out of the mental hospital. I really didn't want to go back there. And so if I had to join up with you guys, you know, to stay out of the mental hospital, I guess, you know, it seemed like a better deal to hang out with you. And I'm hanging out with him, and he's talking about all this madness and this blackness and this depression that he experienced. He was a railroad engineer. And he talked about how his co-workers would drag him onto the caboose when he was supposed to be running the engine, and they'd run the train so he could get to the next stop, you know. And they covered for him. But he talked about, you know, that even though he was doing all that drinking, how depressed he was and how miserable he was. And I identified with that. I'm going, you know what, if this guy's an alcoholic, then I'm probably an alcoholic as well. And I began to go forward with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I discovered is that I only like parts of it. You know, I didn't like all the steps. And so I began to choose the ones. And after years of examination, I realized what I was really, it wasn't that I didn't like the steps. I was afraid of the steps. I was afraid of steps 8 and in particular step 9 because I had some things in my past that I did not want to go back and face, you know, like Ann was talking about. As I had some secrets that I was planning on taking to the grave with me. And I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and then you folks are all open and bubbly and talking about, you know, what you did last night or 10 years ago and who you did it to and why you did it to them. And we laugh, and we think it's funny. And I'm thinking, you guys are crazy, you know. Maybe the mental hospital would have been a better option. So that first sponsor and I spent the first 3.5 years kind of doing Alcoholics Anonymous piecemeal. I got involved with the group. I became the GSR of the group, and I did a lot of service work. I went to all the service meetings, and I loved it, you know, because it kept me busy, and it kept me away from thinking about drinking, and it kept me, more importantly, away from thinking about my past, because everywhere I go, I bring my past with me. And then I did something when I was sober about 3.5 years that you shouldn't do, and I married a woman that I met in the mental hospital. And we stayed together for 16 years, but eventually we parted ways because that's kind of a really shaky foundation when two people come together. with that background. But as a result of that marriage, I moved to another town. And when I moved to that town, my first sponsor said, you know what you need to do? You need to get a sponsor close to you so he can see you and make sure you're going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I agreed with him, you know. And I got the sponsor that I have today. I went to some meetings, and he seemed to be the guy that was most active in the group. He seemed to be the guy that when somebody had a problem, he's the guy they went to. So I went over and I asked him if he would sponsor me. And he coyly said, yeah, well, we can do that, but we're going to work the steps. And we're going to work on a big book. And I thought, well, I've worked the steps. And I've been on the other side of that many times since, where I run into a guy that's sober a long time and he's told me that he's worked the steps, and he hasn't. You know, he's done that, you know, that off the wall. You know, he's done the checklist on the shades on the wall. Yep, done. And he's never really applied the steps. And that's where I was. I had not applied the 12 steps in my life. I had not taken the program and made it a part of me. I had not, you know, gone through 6 and 7, 8 and 9. And so he gets me started, and we get the book, you know, and I really hadn't, you know, I'd read this book and I thought it was a nice read initially. I thought Bill's story was really interesting. I identified with that, and I was sitting at the meeting Sunday night at my home group, and I was thinking, boy, Bill's story is so appropriate today, you know. It says 1929 stock market crash. I'm going, if that could say 2009 stock market crash, you know, the new guy coming in, man, he's got a chance because he could really identify with that. But even though, you know, I didn't live when Bill, Bill was alive when I was born, but I never knew Bill, but I could identify with that story, you know. So I'd read the book, but I didn't know where the steps were in the book other than where it said how it works, you know, and that's where everybody always started with how it works. You know, he said, no, we got to go back here and we got to look at these first chapters in the book because there's a lot of good stuff in there. It's going to talk to you about, you know, step one and step two. It's going to talk to you about, you know, your old ideas. And we're going to talk to you about God. And boy, I didn't want to talk about God because having the background that I have, I was sure that when I left this world, I was probably going to burn in hell. And that concerned me. And so I figured if I stayed away from God, that maybe I could avoid that. But the thing that happened is he did something that was very powerful. He had me come over to his house and go down to his basement and get on my knees and say the prayer with him. And I want you to know, that was really scary. He's a Baptist, and I, for that first 3.5 years in AA, I kind of wandered around, you know, and did things. And I always thought that there was an inner circle in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know how to get into it. Here I was in his basement on my knees thinking, this is when I get into the circle. And this is when those Bible thumpers are going to come out of his closet and they're going to start, you know, with their tambourines and convert me into some religion that I'm not really interested in. And none of that happened. That was all a figment of my imagination. And what happened, and I can't tell you that it happened that day, but I always look back to that day today and I say, that was the day that I really became a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I became willing to take some direction, not of my own making. I became willing to go forward with the rest of the steps. Because he says that's all that third step is. It's simply a decision to go forward, you know, to write the inventory, to go tell somebody else about it, what you've written, those secrets that Ann was talking about. And I'd written an inventory, you know. I like to write about myself. Yeah, I like to talk about myself. And my first inventory that I did with my first sponsor was really long, you know. And it's almost like a confession as opposed to an inventory. And when I did it with my current sponsor, it was a lot shorter. It was to the point. and it had some relevance. Because we identified some things that I needed to do differently. And then he gave me the power to have those things removed. He simply said, are you now ready to have God remove the things you've just identified and what you've written and told me? And I said, yes, I am. And he says, then we're going to pray again. And we're getting on our knees. And we got on our knees, we prayed again, we did a seven-step prayer. And he says, now go home and scrub up your four-step list. We'll call it eight-step list and see if you left anything out. And sure enough, I had. And I left a couple things out. I forgot about the people I had been stealing from because I was afraid that if God found out that I'd been stealing from and I'd die and go to hell, then I'd be in trouble. So I avoided those. But then after that third step, I put him on the list. I went back to him because it seemed like that here's an individual now that's actually given me some positive direction in my life. You know, even though I don't like it because of what I have to do to achieve, you know, what at the time, you know, it looked like, you know, there's goals here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I got to get past these first nine steps so I can get into 10, 11, and 12 and become wonderful. And he had instilled enough courage and strengthened me to go out and start knocking on people's doors. And I was afraid to do that. But he said, if you don't, you may go back to drinking. See, I've got the evidence that I had brought with me to Alcoholics Anonymous says that if I drink again, you know, what will happen is, you know, somebody could die. You know, I could go back to the mental hospital. I don't want to do those things. So I guess, despite the fact that I really don't like the direction that he's given me, I will take it anyway. And in spite of myself, I went and I started knocking on those doors. And I went back and I paid people back where I could. And where I couldn't pay people back, I made indirect amends under his direction. He told me how to do it and where to do it. And I was a college kid at that time. I was in my mid-20s, late 20s at the time. But I said, how do you expect me to pay these people? I'm a college student. I don't have any money. And he says, I don't care. He says, it was never your money. It's their money. You need to give it back to them. And so I found a way. I found a way to be able to put back into life what I had taken out. And then the day came when I went and I faced that family who lost their son as a result of my drinking and driving. And that was a tough day, but it was a day that I was... I'm glad that it's passed because it was tough to sit with these folks and talk to them about what had happened. If there was anything that I could have done differently, traded places, I would have. I felt like I had been set free to a degree. I was sober, you know, 5 years. I was back in college. I graduated. You know, I finally accomplished something in my life besides marrying, getting married. And I'm not sure if that was an accomplishment or not. And when I finished, I was sober 7 years, and I was sponsoring guys, and I was excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. And this wife and I, we decided we would move to the East Coast and look for work here. And that was in 1987, and we did that. And I got here, and I was worried that I wasn't going to find Alcoholics Anonymous to my liking. And I talked to my sponsor, and he gave me a little direction. He says, go create the fellowship that you crave. And that's what I did. I began to do that. And I threw myself into, you know, sponsoring guys, and I got a few guys to sponsor that didn't know right from wrong, and I told them this is what we're going to do, and they followed me, and we started a group, and the group went along very well for about 10 years, and then there was a rebellion and anarchy, and the group split, and I ran off with a bunch of the guys, and we took the podium with us, started another meeting, and we just celebrated our 10th anniversary this past January, and we got a great group of guys and gals that attend that meeting. But along the way there, about the same time that we had this group rebellion and this anarchy, that marriage that I'd been in for 16 years, finally, the fire, if it was ever there, was gone, and it was a dark time. I was sober almost 20 years. Walking around Alcoholics Anonymous, still carrying a lot of baggage around. And it had to do with that thing that had happened to that friend of mine who had died in that car accident. And I had to go back and I had to stand over his grave another time. And I had to go and I had to stand in the house of the field of where the car landed. And I heard a story there from the family who was affected by that. And that there was some positive outcome as a result of it. And just before I had gone there, I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there was an elderly gentleman sitting there. And he, before the meeting, I was telling him why I was there. I told him I was looking for some peace. And he said something to me, just pointed me in the right direction. And I'm not a big Bible guy, but he took it out of the Bible. And I'm going to use it. And he said this. He says, all things work for the good of God. And I had to come back to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says in the family afterwards, it talks about, you know, the things that we've experienced that seem to be so devastating to so many besides ourselves become our greatest assets. That they're the things that will help someone else be able to find freedom and to live. So his little statement brought me back to the book, took me to that house that day. And I walked away a free man finally. Because I began to realize that, you know, what had happened on that night is I had made a decision. And the decision was this, is that I didn't deserve to be happy. And I did everything that I possibly could to not be happy in the time that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. In that page 62, it talks about, you know, that what our course has to be. You know, because we're self-centered. The first thing is we have to quit playing God. And I realized that what I had been doing when I made a decision that I didn't deserve to be happy was that I was playing God. And I needed to stop that. And I did. I came back and I sat down in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, ever so grateful that I was able to remain sober. A few years later, I met a widow, and we got married. We instantly had three children, and they're great kids. They were hers from her first marriage. And no work on my part. and we have a good life today. I love her a lot. And she supports me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes I have to remind her, you know, that she needs to support me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Simply because what I've discovered in AA is that there's a lot of us in this room that don't understand our condition, you know. And how in the world can you expect people that don't even get into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to have a clue as to what alcoholism is? I didn't know. I did not know that when I drank, it affected me different than other people. I didn't realize when I first got here that when I stopped drinking, that it got worse instead of better. And people outside of here, they look at us and they say, why don't you just stop drinking? My parents used to say that. Why don't you just stop drinking? You know, and I would, you know, and then I go crazy. And then I have to drink so that I could feel good again. And so the expectation that people understand alcoholism, you know, it takes us a long time in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to understand that. But once you do, once you understand your condition, it's amazing what you can do with others. As I mentioned, I sponsor a number of people, and I love that. When I believe that when I'm sitting with another alcoholic one-on-one, and I always love to think about Bill and Bob when that happens, is that something happened that night. And anytime I'm with somebody on a one-to-one basis, something happens. And I'm not sure what happens for the other guy. But I know what happens to me is that for just a brief moment, I get far enough outside of myself that I believe that God slips in. And I have the same feeling that I had when I first started drinking. It's like peace and calm. Everything's okay. The world is as it should be. So I try to replicate that as much as I possibly can. I'm ever so grateful for being asked to come by Heidi. Enjoyed Stephen and Ann's talk. It's good to see the old friends, and I miss Van. Thank you very much.
Thank you.